How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez here on Wrestling Observer Live. We're here for the next 2 hours talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts, joined, as always, by Mike Sempervivi of the Adam and Mike Big Audio Nightmare at WrestlingObserver.com. Tons of stuff to talk about today, including last week when we went off the air. It was the WWE Elimination Chamber about to begin. We've got the results of that pay-per-view. It pretty much finalizes everything on the road to WrestleMania. So we'll look at that pay-per-view. We'll look at where WrestleMania appears to be headed in all the major matches. A big stipulation for the Undertaker Shawn Michaels match, for those of you that didn't watch Raw. We'll talk about that. Plus, there was a near tragic injury at the pay-per-view at Elimination Chamber. A wrestler got burned by pyro. We'll talk about what happened. Also, WWE has had a bunch of cuts. Talk about who's gone and why. The lineup for the Live Impact, which is coming up on March 8th. Talk about Ric Flair. We'll talk about the TNA rating, which is kind of back to normal, and some of the perhaps extenuating circumstances surrounding that. We'll talk about Jim Ross, whether or not he's coming back to WWE. The draft is coming up. NXT debuted on Tuesday night, and it was actually much better than ECW. We'll talk about the show. We'll talk about who they tried to make into a new star, whether or not it worked, and the potential of the show down the road. WWE has changed more pay-per-view names. We'll give you those. Talk a little bit about Strikeforce on Saturday night. Chuck Liddell and his naked workout. For those of you that have seen that and don't know the story behind it, Frank Mir opened his big mouth yet again. Got himself in trouble with Dana White, who unleashed some profanity on him. I can't say it here on the air, but he called him some very bad names. We'll talk about UFC heading to theaters, the WWE Hall of Fame, and more. That's all coming up in the next 2 hours. Also, be taking your phone calls and emails on a number of subjects, so it should be a good time. We'll get started on the show, talking Elimination Chamber right after this next break. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com, here to talk about all the news in pro wrestling and mixed martial arts for the next 2 hours. And we got a lot to talk about today, as noted in the opening segment. Elimination Chamber was this past Sunday night. It was the final stop on the road to WrestleMania. And the two champions coming out of the show, Undertaker lost his title to Chris Jericho, after interference by Shawn Michaels. So Jericho will be heading to WrestleMania to face Edge. And in the other chamber, John Cena won the title. Triple H eliminated Sheamus. John Cena eliminated Triple H. And then Vince McMahon signed an impromptu match, and Batista came out and beat Cena, which appears to set up Cena versus Batista at WrestleMania as well. And Mike, your thoughts on the show and the top matches thus far at Mania?
I think, at least for The Undertaker that night, losing the title was a lot better than losing his life, as anybody who didn't hear about the pay-per-view. During The Undertaker's introduction, the pyrotechnics went off a little bit early, and he was engulfed in flames, and probably the scariest thing I've seen in a long time. It was very, very scary, and you knew something was up because The Undertaker, who, you know, moves as fast as The Undertaker's going to move and never likes to break character, took his hat off and his jacket, threw it down, and got to the ring as fast as he possibly could. And it was just amazing that he was able to go through that match as stone-faced as he did, because first and second degree burns on his chest and his face, and very, very scary.
Yeah, it's actually a good thing that he was wearing all that he was wearing. He had his hat and the big duster and everything like that, and that protected him from a lot of it. But, I mean, if you look at The Undertaker's outfit, and what is not covered, it's nothing but his chest and his face. So that's what got the burns. And if he'd been out there just in a singlet, for example, or if he'd just been out there in, for example, what Randy Orton comes to the ring in, just a pair of trunks, it would have been a horrible situation. But he got down there to his pod. They gave him water bottles. He poured the water all over himself and attempted to cool off. And they claimed they gave him the opportunity to, what they claimed was that they had a doctor examine him and give him the okay to continue, which nobody was there saw. But they did ask him if he wanted to cut the match short, and he said, no, let's do the whole thing. And he worked the entire match in extreme pain, but he is a tough man. And thankfully, he's all right, but a very scary situation, and they're already talking about... I mean, if you watch Raw, there was fire... I mean, there was no fire within 20 feet of him. And I think at WrestleMania, they normally do all the big pyro fire entrance for Undertaker, and they're already talking about scaling that back quite a bit as well to avoid problems like this in the future.
You know, and the end of that match, obviously, Chris Jericho winning the title. We had talked about it last week, whether they would... try to get cute with it or something like that, but they basically did really the right thing, which was, you know, continue on with the Undertaker's Michaels match that didn't need the belt anyway, and then have Edge and Jericho. That actually went perfect for me.
And, of course, on Raw, we added the stipulation for the Shawn Michaels-Undertaker match that his career is on the line. Shawn came out and said that he did what he did to get the match with Undertaker, because, of course, that's what he's been obsessing about for months. And Undertaker said, all right, I accept, but this year you're going to need to put something on the line. And basically said that, if you want to try to end the streak, that's fine. If you win, you get the streak. But if I win, your career is over. And Shawn accepted. And the match is on. It is now streak versus career. And we have a question here from Superkick Kid, who says, with Shawn Michaels' career on the line at WrestleMania, looking back at his career, I was curious as to what do you think was Shawn's best period of his career and what were your personal favorite periods in his career? First off, the match itself, the retirement stipulation. What do you think, Mike, and what do you think the finish is going to be?
I like it. It was a nice wrinkle to throw in there. It doesn't change it for me in that. I mean, obviously, if you're going to have somebody break the streak, Shawn Michaels is a good guy and, you know, somebody that would make sense to do it. But I figure, I mean, Michaels has wanted to take time off anyway. I guess there's a rumor that he wants to take the summer off as it is. So, you know, it doesn't really change much for me. And I see Undertaker winning and the streak continuing on. I just, you know, it's one of those things where I wouldn't break that streak unless you absolutely had to. I mean, I think The Undertaker, just because of the status he has in the locker room and what he's done throughout his career, I mean, that would be up to him if he wanted to lose it to somebody. And really, if Shawn Michaels loses, and if he were to come back at some point, it's not like it would be, you know, people wouldn't accept it or would rebel against it or something like that. So I'm actually completely happy with the wrinkle that they threw in, but I still think The Undertaker wins and Michaels disappears for a while.
Well, it looks like they're both going to be disappearing for a while after WrestleMania. But, yeah, one would expect that Shawn is going to retire for the time being. And he's been taking time off after WrestleMania every year. And maybe they'll extend it. Maybe he'll take a full year off or something like that. I don't know. I know that most people that I've talked to are expecting that Shawn is going to lose the match. And they also are not expecting him to be retired for all that long. So, I don't know. Nobody believes retirement stipulations. I don't really know if they believe this one. I like it, but the more I think about it, the more I'm not sold on it, in the sense that I guess it does add something to the pay-per-view, but does anybody really believe that Shawn is going to be retired for more than, 6 months or so? I don't know. It's just, I thought when they did it, I liked it a lot. And I thought both guys were so good that it was a great stipulation. But the more I think about it, the more I think about what it's actually going to be. And I don't know. It is a blatant bait and switch here on Raw is what it's going to be.
But I think maybe the average or the casual fan, that they'll buy into it a little bit more, because they may not know that no matter if somebody were to go down, WWE, the first thing they do is get on the phone to Shawn Michaels and say, hey, would you please come back? So at least as far as, you know, having the rematch, it does throw another wrinkle in there leading up to it. It's more for the casual fan.
Yeah, it does add I mean, there's obviously something to it now where people think, well, maybe Shawn will win. So I guess that's the idea that they had. I think maybe, I don't know, I'm trying to think of another stipulation that would accomplish that same thing. But obviously the career versus streak is the best they could come up with. And it is kind of funny that they're building up a retirement stipulation. And this is not their fault, mind you. But March 8th, which is just a few weeks before WrestleMania, 3 weeks or so before WrestleMania, March 8th, who is going to be in the main event on the Impact show going head-to-head with Raw but Ric Flair? The man who 2 years ago retired, supposedly, at WrestleMania. He's back in the ring working. And in a sense, that does kind of badly hurt WWE's own stipulation. But at least you can argue that, well, WWE never brought back Ric Flair, so at least they abided by it. Whereas in reality, in this case, they're probably not going to abide by it. But you never know. Maybe this is actually an idea by Sean to actually get to retire for real this time, in the sense that he says, okay, let's do the stipulation. We'll come up with an idea to bring me back in 6 months. But then after they let him go, he announces he's not coming back at all, and that actually was his retirement. Who knows where it's going to go, but I guess we shall see.
I actually thought that in the back of my mind, that he may use that to actually, like, take, you know, 8 consecutive months off or something like that, just by saying, hey, look, no, you told me to retire.
Sure, exactly. Also at WrestleMania, there's Money in the Bank, which is fascinating since there is a Money in the Bank pay-per-view coming up. I'm going to grab the new pay-per-view schedule here in just a moment. We'll take a look at that. But very interesting that they're doing a Money in the Bank pay-per-view coming up in 3 or 4 months. And at the same time, they're doing a Money in the Bank at WrestleMania. We talked about this last week. And, you know, I don't like the idea of two briefcases being held by guys at the same time. It waters down the concept. And one person last week emailed and said, maybe the Money in the Bank pay-per-view is where the guy who wins the briefcase has to cash it in. But that makes absolutely no sense, because the whole point of Money in the Bank is you can cash it in anytime, anywhere, and it's always a surprise. If you've got an actual pay-per-view where it's where that's the day they have to cash it in, then why have Money in the Bank? Why not just say that the winner of this match gets a title shot at the Money in the Bank pay-per-view? And that kind of takes away all of the intrigue about when the guy may cash in. And they did mention, by the way, they did mention on, I think it was SmackDown, that the winner can cash in his briefcase at WrestleMania. And it has never been done before, but at some point they have to do it. And I don't know if this is going to be the year. We can talk about this after the break, but at some point they have to do that. We're going to head to a break right now. We'll talk about this more when we get back. Also start taking your phone calls and emails. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Ryan Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com, here for the next hour and a half talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. Lots of topics to cover today. I'll stake in your phone calls and emails on a number of subjects. We're talking about the Elimination Chamber, Money in the Bank. And Mike, we mentioned this a little bit last week, but any new thoughts on Money in the Bank being both a pay-per-view and a match at WrestleMania?
Yeah, you know, it's a great concept for a match. You know, as far as where a pay-per-view goes, I don't see how it's going to work, or, you know, just kills the specialness of it if you're going to have a, you know, two on a pay-per-view or something like that, or if it really is going to lead up to, you know, the guy having to cash it in. I think it's a goofy idea. You know, I'm sure they're going to have some sort of threat in this Money in the Bank, which leads into the pay-per-view. They'll somehow loosely tie it together. You know, one thing they could do for WrestleMania, but it would require planning, is if they wanted to have a concept match for WrestleMania next year, because you take Money in the Bank off, have War Games. You do nothing going into the draft anyway. Have a one random feud, possibly between a guy on each side, wrap up there, and then the winner of that match gets the number one draft pick or something like that, leading into the 3-hour Raw in the draft. That's just an idea. As far as the concept goes for a pay-per-view, I don't see how it's going to work, and it's just, I don't know. I'm not a big fan of it at all.
Well, it is interesting. They're bringing back bragging rights, which I thought bragging rights was so stupid, but yeah. They're bringing it back, and it's the one thing with the bragging rights. I thought it might have worked if there was actually something on the line, like if the winning team got a draft pick, like a major name, or the winning team really got anything. Instead, what they got was a goofy trophy, and they had the trophy, and they had the trophy on TV for like 2 days, and you never saw the trophy again. They didn't really brag about it. I mean, they didn't even brag about it. You know what I mean? If SmackDown were still bragging about winning today, maybe that would mean something next year when the bragging rights pay-per-view comes around. But they won. They celebrated with their trophy for a day, the trophy disappeared, they stopped bragging, and I just thought, what in the hell was the point of this pay-per-view?
Exactly, when something like that, if you are going to do something like that, why not have it, I mean, th- this is around the time of year where they'll smack the red Raw and the blue SmackDown shirts on guys leading into WrestleMania in the draft. Why not have that in April then? I mean, it just doesn't really make any sense for them to have it in October. It just makes no sense whatsoever. And find it interesting, too, they still haven't come up with a wacky name for November's show yet either.
That's right. November, mentioned briefly last week, Survivor Series is done. The problem with Survivor Series was
Well, there's two schools of thought on that. What they think was wrong with it and what was actually wrong with it.
Yeah, they think the name is antiquated. They think that the four-team versus four-team elimination match, which actually originally was five versus five, was it five teams strive to survive? Is that the catchphrase?
That's what it always used to be, survive.
Yeah, it hasn't been built around that in years, but they still claim that the reason nobody bought this pay-per-view was because Survivor Series is an antiquated formula. Never mind the fact that Survivor Series for years, was one of the most purchased pay-per-views of the year. The reason it died this year was because of the way that it was promoted. The main event was Triple H, John Cena, and Shawn Michaels. And by the way, the fact that I remember that off the top of my head, that should tell you the impact this made on me. The entire main event for weeks was built around bad comedy. The guys were goofing around, they were making jokes, and nobody bought the pay-per-view. Because why would you? Why would you buy a pay-per-view where everybody was joking around and acting like idiots? So, of course, nobody bought the show, and they had to blame it on something. You can't blame it on Shawn Michaels. You can't blame it on John Cena. You certainly can't blame it on Triple H. You can't blame it on your own writing crew. So they had to blame it on the name. And thus, yes, November now does not have a pay-per-view. It is still to be announced. And the official lineup for this year looks to be Rumble in the Elimination Chamber, which you've already had, WrestleMania. April will be Extreme Rules, which used to be used to be the ECW pay-per-view in June. They've moved it to April, and it's funny they're doing an Extreme Rules match, and they don't even have ECW anymore. We've got May, WWE Over the Limit, which sounds like a line from The Big Lebowski, and I guarantee this show won't be as good as that movie. We've got Fatal 4-Way in June, which, I don't know. The four-team Survivor Series concept is antiquated, but a Fatal 4-Way is fine. All right. We've got Money in the Bank in July, as we've been talking about. We've got SummerSlam still in August. We've got the Night of the Champions in September, which actually was a successful pay-per-view. Every time they've done it, really, as far as a B-show. Fans, for some reason, want to see the people fight for the titles, even though titles don't seem to mean anything. We've got Hell in a Cell and Bragging Rights, both in October, which is, there's no need for two, but they're doing it. November to be announced, and December is TLC. And any thoughts on that lineup?
By the way,
I just want to interrupt you very quickly. That does mean in December, every year, we're going to get to see another chair match.
Over the Limit, I guess, sounds better than Wild Card, which was the first the name for that pay-per-view. But, I mean, it's just where they want themed pay-per-views, and they got themed pay-per-views. And you know, it's amazing, too, with, you know, talking about the Survivor Series and Elite, you know, all of their pay-per-views, really, post-WrestleMania, I mean, they didn't do great buy rates. Most of them were down. And the builds for all of them kind of stumped. They went into that cruise control mode, but, you know, I think it's just a pretty cheap excuse to use that when you just come out and say, hey, you want new wacky pay-per-views and just put it like that because that's what you got right now. Yeah, really, two in October, why?
Because that's how they've done it for a while. There's absolutely no good reason to have a pay-per-view, two pay-per-views in 1 month. Fans just, the two pay-per-view months, unless you've got two great pay-per-views, it just, one of them is going to suffer.
And if you are going to do two pay-per-view months, try to figure out a way you can shoehorn, like, WrestleMania in, which everyone's going to buy anyway, shoehorn that in there with, like, Elimination Chamber or something like that, where you've got a reason for somebody to buy two pay-per-views in a month.
Let's talk a little bit about the March 8th show. We are a little over a week away from TNA going live on Monday night. A lot of people have been talking about it. What does it mean? I've been arguing with people on our message board now for quite a while about the main event of the show, which is Hulk Hogan and Abyss against Ric Flair and AJ Styles. The fact they're giving this match away for free. My argument is that Hulk Hogan and Ric Flair are going to draw exactly one time on pay-per-view. And you may as well use March 8th to build up that match, put it on pay-per-view, and try and make some money off of it. If you look at what the most successful TNA pay-per-views have done, they have the potential to make $500,000 off this match. Instead, they're going to give it away for free on Impact. I guess in what people are saying is an attempt to establish them in the time slot. Like, this one match is going to be so big that they are going to become established in the time slot opposite Raw and I guess do great ratings every week. I don't know what people are actually expecting this match to accomplish here, but I find the whole idea to be incredibly stupid. And I think, if anything, they're going to get a big quarter or two, maybe a decent rating going head-to-head. But what do you do the next week? You can't build up to a rematch with those guys. Hogan is extremely limited. I don't think we're going to be seeing Flair wrestle every week. I mean, I don't know. You're going to use Hogan and Flair to build up for Abyss versus AJ Styles? That seems like you're going in the opposite direction. So I am not one of those people that think this match should be given away for free. And Mike, what are your thoughts?
Well, that's the thing that's so stupid about it, because, you know, they all admit it's going to take weeks and weeks and months of work to catch up and get up to WWE's level. So it doesn't really, I mean, not that it doesn't matter what you do on the 8th, but, I mean, Flair, you know, leading buckets, you know, would be just would get a big of a quarter hour as seeing him and Hogan wrestle or in the same ring together. So why not save that for the pay-per-view? It's just one of those things that just does, I don't understand it.
So the show is going head-to-head. It's going from 9 to 11, as we've been mentioning here for a while. And I don't know, what do you think as far as a ratings prediction for that show?
Yeah. I'll say, you know, right now, 1-4. But it depends on what WWE throws up there at the wall, too. But I'll say a 1-4, but then it's going to be right back to the 1-2 again. You know, with worse quarter hours, and that's going to be the thing, too, is these quarter hours that finish under one. I want to see when the first one is and how this is going to go, because I just don't think right now the rating is going to stay just about the same, honest to God. Some quarter hours will be spiked upwards, which will help out the overall rating, but, I mean, realistically, I just think they're going to hover around the same thing.
And what would you say as far as the long-term prospects of Impact if that happens? Because, obviously, you know, it's a big deal to be going head-to-head on Monday nights. I mean, this is the thing that everybody's been talking about as far as this is what TNA needs to go to the next level. And obviously, the January 4th show, it was up. It did help them to go on Monday nights. But long-term, I mean, do you see them maintaining this number, I mean, over the course of the next year? Do you think you will see them slowly go up? Or do you think in a year from now, we'll maybe be seeing it at 0.9?
No, I think we'll probably be hovering around the same. I just think that core is going to watch no matter what. And yeah, they're going to attract some people, but, you know, you have to have faith in them that you're going to have somebody that links in somebody switching over from Raw for the first time or something like that, something so good that it's really going to lock them in, and I don't see anything, you know, like that right now in the foreseeable future, so it's probably going to hover around the same damn thing. I mean, I know there's the thought of, well, look, if it fails, we can just go back to Thursday, but, I mean, that's going to really... I mean, there's got to be some sort of pride issue there that's really going to take it out on some guys, too. If that's what they have to do, put the tail back between their legs and go back to Thursday night, you know, that's going to be just as bad as just staying on Monday getting slaughtered. So, I don't know. It's just, I can't, they're going to have to do something here. They have to come up with something that's going to lock people in. And I just, as of now, there hasn't been that thing yet.
We're going to head to a break. We'll be back in just a moment. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com, here for the next hour and a half talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. I'm going to head to the phones right now, see what's on your mind. You're on Wrestling Observer Live. Who is this and where are you calling from?
Hey, what's up, guys? It's Jimmy in St. Louis.
Jimmy, what's happening?
Not wondering, what do you think TNA has to do as far as ratings to consider their... Monday experiment of success.
Well, I mean, internally, as far as ratings, they wanted to go up, obviously. I mean, if you look at their rating they did on January 4th, if they can do that rating every week, they will consider that a success. If they're going Monday nights live and they're doing the exact same rating they're doing on Thursday nights, but they're having to pay all the extra money to go live every other week, then that would be a failure. So if they can do a 1-3, a 1-4, a 1-5 consistently, then that will be a success. If they're doing 1-1, 1-2, or lower than that, that's a pretty big failure.
Yeah, if they can get through 1-5 and then hover there for at least a while, I would take that as a success and something to at least build on.
Anything else?
Do you know why MVP got taken off the NXT show? Because that just seemed kind of random, and I know he's been in trouble before. Is he in more trouble or what?
I want to thank you very much for the call. I don't think he's in trouble. I think what happens was the guy that he was with, who I actually already forget his name, but he's doing a cowboy gimmick. And I think they figured that William Regal as the Englishman having to mentor the wacky cowboy, I think they figured that would be a lot funnier than MVP mentoring the cowboy. So basically that, I'm pretty sure that's what happened. I haven't heard of MVP having any heat or anything like that, but that's just the impression that I got from the way everything went down. We should actually talk about NXT and the releases. And since we talked about MVP and having heat, let's start with the releases. WWE every year usually does some spring cleaning, and it's usually right after WrestleMania, but they went before WrestleMania this year. And they released several people. They released referee Scott Armstrong. They released Paul Burchill. They released the Hurricane, and they released Maria. Now, Paul Burchill and the Hurricane, really no surprise. I was sad to see Paul Burchill released in the sense that I thought he was a really good worker, thought he was a good talker, and he just never got a chance. Hurricane was kind of, he screwed up a lot, and his recent drunken arrest didn't help matters, so that was really no surprise. Maria was a surprise initially since she's a big star. She was a Diva of the Year, and she, which actually... that was legit voting, everybody. The Diva of the Year thing for the Slammies. That's why she won. They actually didn't want her to win, but they went with the legit voting, and she won. And they just put her into the storyline with Matt Hardy, and then they axed her. And the feeling is that she was getting ready to go on Celebrity Apprentice, do very well, apparently, and they cut their losses. They figured she was going to be another Stacy Keibler, where as soon as she did well on the show, she was going to end up being a success and getting a lot of offers outside of wrestling. So they figured, okay, we'll cut her now. So they cut her a day after her birthday. And a lot of people were initially surprised, but then when they thought about it, they really weren't all that surprised at all about her. And then Scott Armstrong, which it's been several days now, and I have no idea why he was cut. Nobody has any idea he was cut. He was a really good referee. He was well-liked by everybody. People were just shocked that they got rid of Scott Armstrong. I was talking to a friend of mine about all these cuts, and he heard Scott Armstrong, and he was gobsmacked, which, of all the people, initially I was like, that one shocks you, but then I thought about it, and I was like, you know, you're right. Why was he cut? So I have no idea, but those are the four axed, and Mike, your thoughts on any of them?
That was the one that shocked me the most, too, because, is it because they want nameless, faceless young guys and everybody knew Scott Armstrong's name? They're still upset about people knowing the referees' names or something like that? I mean, I don't know why he would be outright cut and not sent to Florida or something like that. I mean, Scott Armstrong's, you know, as an agent or as a trainer, would have a lot to give, and just that was a real surprise. Maria's not really a surprise at all, just because of what you were saying. The offers are going to roll in afterwards, and it makes it look good for WWE, too, because you have somebody, you know, going out when they want to go out. And they have, look, Maria's, she was pretty, but there's a whole bunch of other nameless, faceless women in a lot of ways that could fill her void just fine. Hurricane, for the reasons you named, I'm surprised he wasn't cut a long time ago. And Paul Burchill, who, my hope for him is he goes over to All Japan and works with Muda or goes over to Japan, because I think he could come back with something more to give. This is the problem with coming up too early or coming up with the wrong character. I still think everybody thinks of him as a very bad pirate.
That's right. He was the pirate. I always laughed about the pirate because I guess this must have been between Pirates 1 and Pirates 2, Pirates of the Caribbean, the movies. And they, I guess they did the first movie, and then they came up with this idea for this pirate character. And they gave it to Paul Burchill. And they had him grow a pirate mustache, and he, like, he swung down on a rope. You know what I mean? He was all, he was a swashbuckler.
And, that was really funny.
Yeah, and I remember that, like, I think the new Pirates movie, it was either 2 or 3. It was coming out in, like, July, let's just say. And I remember that they got rid of the pirate character in June. And I just thought, you couldn't wait one more month to see if maybe the success of the movie would spill over to the success of the pirate. No, they cut him, they cut the character a month before the movie came out. I was always shocked by that one, but I guess I shouldn't have. So they have no patience. But yes, 4 down, and I hate saying things like this because I don't like to concern people, but I've been told there may be a couple more coming before WrestleMania. So I guess we can look towards that.
I think there'll be 10 in the next 2 months.
You predict 10?
I would predict 6 more, yeah.
Oh, it's 10 total, okay. Well, you know, they got the NXT guys coming up, and so they've got to, well, they don't have to. I mean, they're making so damn much money that they could probably have everyone in the world under contract at some degree. But, yes, they brought up some guys from NXT, and I know you saw the show on Tuesday night. And what were your thoughts?
I'm not good with new concepts like that. It's going to take me a while to kind of warm up to this. I haven't seen a lot of Florida. I've seen enough Florida to know that except for Otunga because of, you know, his rap and the character he can play, and Bryan Danielson, all of these guys should still be in Florida. And I don't know. The whole thing was just, you know, personality, personality, personality. This is what we're teaching, personality. Just jam down your throat the whole time. Michael Cole being the new heel, Michael Cole. And it came off as really, it's too goofy for me right now. But, you know, I didn't like Tough Enough at first and then fell into that one. It's going to be interesting to see if they can, because they're not, obviously, not going to have Jericho and Danielson every week. So it's going to be interesting to see if this can actually hold my attention.
It was way better than ECW, I will say that.
This is true.
It's kind of a... Boy, it's funny to watch it after hearing about it in advance for weeks. I mean, the one thing that I kept being told over and over was there's a new... What was the word they used? There's some sort of new shooting style. Was what they called
style,
it.
Yeah, so the big XFL overhead camera, it's going to be crazy, it's going to be great. It was just the same thing TNA uses.
Yeah, same thing TNA and ROH both use. And,
yeah.
And I mean, Vince was so excited about this. And when I saw it, I was like, you know, it took me a while to even notice it, so it's not a big deal. But when I did notice it, it was like, I liked it in the sense that it was different. Because we've seen WWE shot the exact same way for like 2 decades now, but or at least a decade. And when I saw the new, it's basically a hovering hard camera. It's on a whatever they call it on the big mechanical arm, and basically, if you've ever seen Randy Orton's entrance, it's that all the time, where he gets on the turnbuckle and the camera kind of rotates around, and as noted, ROH and TNA both use it. And I saw it, and I liked it that it was different, and I didn't like it because the way it's normally shot with the hard camera, you can see both sides of the ring and a little bit of the apron if guys are there for tag matches. And for some reason, when they did the swinging camera, it made the building look a lot smaller. It made the ring look smaller, it made the building look smaller, it made it look like there were less people in the building. And I mean, I've been to TNA or WWE tapings in the Key Arena, or whatever it's called now. I think it's called the Key Arena. I think it was the Seattle Center Arena before. But I mean, it's not a big building. It may seat 6,000, 7,000 or something like that. But you watch it on TV and it looks like a much bigger place than it actually is. When you're there live, it's like, God, this building is small. And when you watch it on TV, it doesn't come across that way. But if they shoot that building with that camera, it's going to expose how small that building really is. So I didn't like that aspect, and we'll talk about that more in a second, but I want to take this call. You're on Wrestling Observer Live. Who is this and where are you calling from?
This is Mike from Monticello, New York.
Mike, what's going on?
Not too much. You know, I wanted to ask you guys a question about TNA.
Yeah.
Now we know, with Hogan and Bischoff coming in, everything's changing, and the Monday Night Wars are coming back March 8th. My question is I've been hearing and reading a lot about Eric Bischoff talking about how important ratings are, but has Bischoff really learned his lesson? I mean, ratings, worrying about ratings and not about what kind of money you were drawing was what killed WCW in the first place. It became, everything was about ratings and it wasn't about making money. And what do you guys think about it?
Well, I've been asking that same question. I mean, obviously, ratings are important to a degree in the sense that if you are being backed by a television company, and Spike TV is paying them a lot, and I shouldn't say a lot of money, nowhere near what WWE has paid for TV, but they're getting several million dollars a year from Spike TV. So obviously you want to keep your ratings up because you want to, you want to keep that relationship with the TV station good. But at the same time, they're not making $20 million a year from TV like WWE is. They're making significantly less than that. And if they want to make more money, it's got to come from pay-per-view. And they don't care at all about pay-per-view. And it's shocking to me. I guess we'll see what they end up doing. I know the buy rate for January was not great. It should have been significantly higher. We'll see how they do for War Games and some of the other shows coming up. But They need, to me, a better balance. It's too much focused on TV right now and not enough on pay-per-view. And I'm not saying it should be 100% on one or the other. It should just be a better balance. And Mike, go ahead.
Well, I mean, that's going to be the thing, too, is Spike TV, how they look. I mean, if WWE puts it in cruise control, I mean, people becoming fans of TNA and ROH, that doesn't help wrestling. A strong WWE, trickles down and helps the rest of wrestling. And If ratings are going to stay the way they are or start dropping a little bit in TNA because they're going head-to-head and they really have nothing to draw people in, and WWE at the time isn't drawing anything either, that drops Spike's overall, of going after the male demographic. It's going to drop their overall rating because I'm not sure exactly what their ratings are, but I'm sure TNA is one of the higher-rated things on there. So if that starts dropping, it's going to drop the overall channel, and they don't need that right now either.
Gallery, you had one more quick question?
And really quick, do you guys, I know it takes time because wrestling, it takes years and everybody wants this thing to be a quick fix. What do you guys think personally long term as far as the Monday Night Wars coming back? Do you think it'll help bring some viewers back who have left in the period of time when WWE reigned supreme? Or do you think, like Mike just said, that this may cause a decrease in viewership overall?
All right, we'll get to that question right after the break. I want to thank you very much for the call. We actually have to head to a break, but when we come back, we'll discuss that question and more. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. The last caller was asking us about the long-term prospects of a new Monday Night War. Will it help things? Will it hurt viewership? If everything goes the way it went on January 4th every week, then it's going to help viewership. There were more people watching wrestling on January 4th than there have been in years. However, if you look at the Impact rating the next several weeks, they did get a bump the following Thursday, or at least 10 days later on Thursday. They did get a bump, but they are now back to a 1.14. And granted, it is up against the Olympics, and that's not going to help them. But it appears that they got a whole bunch of new viewers. They sampled the product. A few of them came back on Thursday, and then those people slowly gave up. So we'll see. It is on Thursday that the ratings have fallen again. So maybe on Monday night, maybe it will increase viewership across the board for an extended period of time, and it will be great for wrestling. I'm not even going to make a prediction since I don't know. All I know is they've done Monday once. It was a success. We'll see if they can do it again. And, Mike, quickly, your thoughts.
Like I said, they may get a 1-5 tops out of it, but I don't think they're going to be able to hold it. And just, they need to come up with something that's really going to latch people in.
We're going to head to our hourly break. When we come back, we've got more news to talk about. We've got more emails. We've got more phone calls. We've got another hour of pro wrestling and mixed martial arts talk here on the show, including the Chuck Liddell naked workout video. For those of you that have not seen it, it's something else. We'll talk about it. We'll talk about why it was done and more. That's coming up in hour two. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. Here for the next hour, talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts, taking your phone calls and emails. It's a short segment here, so let's get right into it. We've got a caller here on the line. You're on Wrestling Observer Live. Who is this and where are you calling from?
Hey, Brian. This is the Peach Machine in St. Louis.
Peach, what's going on?
Not a lot, man. I had a question regarding cuts from WWE, and what I was wondering is, I don't really know the process. Do they just, hey, get a phone call, hey, Maria, you're gone. Like, how does it work? And then, like, do they pay them for the rest of their contract, or their contract rolls over, and then they just look and go, we don't want them anymore? I was just wondering about that process.
To the best of my knowledge, John Laurinaitis gives him a call. He profusely apologizes. He says that creative has nothing for them, or whatever the excuse might be. And then if they're cut, it's usually a 90-day no compete where they're paid for 90 days, their regular downside guarantee, and then after the 90 days, they stop being paid and they're allowed to do whatever they want. And I think Maria's runs out. Actually, like, right around the end of Celebrity Apprentice, ironically. So that's usually how the process works.
So for someone like Maria, she's like every 6 months they renew her contract, or how does that work?
Well, no, they usually would sign. Most people sign, like, a three-year deal. Some people sign more. I think Randy Orton recently signed, like, a 10-year deal or something like that. But I think most people, it's 2 or 3 years. And, you know, after the 3 years, you get re-signed or whatever happens. But, I mean, they can cut you at any time for any reason. But if they do, it's the 90-day no-compete, and you get paid for that period.
Gotcha. So, I mean, they don't even have to have a reason. They can just say, oh, we're done. Bye.
The reason is usually creative had nothing for you, which is always a hilarious reason. As Jim Cornette has mentioned many times on the show, if creative has no idea for you, why don't they fire creative instead of the person? But, of course, that would not make any sense. Hey, Peach, we actually have to head to a break, but stay on the line because I want to talk to you very briefly because I know you you fought this past weekend.
Oh, yeah, I did.
Yeah, so I want to talk to you about that. So hold here on the line, and we'll get back to you here in just a second. We're heading to a break. We'll be back in just a moment with Peach Machine talking some MMA and more. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We have our buddy Peach Machine here on the line, who's going to talk briefly about his MMA fight this weekend. And Peach, you and I had a grappling battle down in Las Vegas, and thankfully no striking. But apparently you had full striking in your fight this weekend. Was this your first MMA fight?
It was my first in a couple of years. I'd taken about 2 years off. I fought previously, and then I kind of semi-retired, but you know how that goes. And I got coaxed back in a couple more fights here. So I fought last night in a little amateur show, and it was full contact, you know, regular rules, and in a cage. And unfortunately, I got beat at the end of the first round. I got submitted a rear naked choke, and it sucks because I was 2 seconds away from the bell, and I couldn't hear the 10-second board and get hit. And I don't know, it sucks. But I was doing good up until that point.
Yeah, now you mentioned actually that your next fight is this coming weekend. It's a rather quick turnaround.
Yeah, you know, in St. Louis, it's a pretty big hotbed here for MMA. And, you know, I didn't take any damage. Dude didn't hit me at all. I actually did a lot more damage than him. I just made a mistake. And he, you know, got one thing on me and choked me. So, yeah, it's going to be next Saturday. I'm going to fight again. And, you know, so whatever, it's not like you're getting paid for these amateur shows. I just sell some tickets and make a little bit of money, and it's just for fun, so.
Did you take more or less of a beating than you would in an average pro wrestling match?
Oh, far less. Far, far less, which is ridiculous, quite frankly, because I did pro wrestling for about 10 years. And in pro wrestling, you know, I can rattle off, okay, broken rib, blown out eardrums, you know, fucked up knees, can we cuss, whatever. And then, you know, MMA fights, it's been like, yeah, I got my nose broke a couple of times, but you take more beating in MMA practice than you do in the MMA match, quite frankly.
Keith, where you are, how big are the, what's the rules difference as far as the amateurs and pros go?
There's one main difference is there's no elbows or forearms allowed at all at any time. And so they're trying to avoid, you know, cut stoppages and stuff like that, and just I'm a teacher. I got to go to work on Monday, so the less of a less stitches I got to get in my head, the better. That's the main rule difference. There's 3 3-minute rounds. I think the refs are a little bit more protective. They stop it a little bit early. Guy's not doing much, they stop it. Or guys being stubborn to tap on an arm bar, which I saw on Friday night. One of my guys pulled a nice arm bar, and the guy just wasn't going to tap. And the ref's like, "You're an idiot. This is over." So other than that, it's the same.
Do your students know that you are engaged in such a barbaric activity?
Yeah, and ironically, a guy on my team, my first year teaching, he was a senior at the high school where I teach, and now we're fighting together. So, yeah, they know, but it, you know, and people are always like, "Oh, well, what are your kids think?" I'm like, "Well, my kids think it's really cool, quite frankly." And I'm a big advocate against violence and against retarded, you know, school beatings and stuff like that. And they're like, "Well, what happens if someone spits in your face?" I go, "I walk away. You know, I'm not a fighter. I'm an athlete." And so I kind of use that. And I also compare it to, like, well, you know, well, what if I was an Olympic skier and I broke my leg and I came in with a broken leg? That would be, like, courageous and honorable. Well, my sport is this. So it's, I don't know, it's really not a big deal.
So that's coming up this weekend, and you want to plug where it's at, or would you rather not?
I don't know where it's at.
Oh,
I don't
that's
know where
good.
It's at. But if you're in the St. Louis area, PM me, and I'll shoot you some ticket prizes.
Sounds like a plan, and thanks again for doing the show today here. Very much appreciate it. I was just getting a PM right there in the middle of that that speech, so I apologize to everybody for that. Everybody just sending all these wacky messages during the show. I'm trying to work here, everybody. So, yeah, Peach Machine this coming weekend in St. Louis. So there you go. Let's do some of the emails here, and then we'll get back into the phone calls and the news, of which we have in abundance. This person here says, "Guys, you see a clean finish in the Shawn Michaels Undertaker match at WrestleMania since there are already rumors of a third match in next year's WrestleMania." Rumors, you say? I've not heard these rumors, and I don't know. I don't know about a third match. I mean, maybe. I mean, if this one's really good, then I think people would pay for it. But I don't like the idea. I don't like the idea of a screw job. And really, when I think about this, how do you? I mean, here's a problem that I also have with this retirement stipulation. And really, this whole thing don't get me wrong, this whole thing has been great. I mean, I love the way they've set it up. I've loved, like, everything about it. But I still have minor qualms, and this is one of them. If Shawn Michaels loses this match, why would he ever come back? Like, what storyline could you possibly have to bring the guy out of retirement? Since he's completely obsessed with winning this match, it's all he can think about. And if he goes in there and loses again, how do you coax him out of retirement? To try one more time? He's failed twice. Like, I don't understand how you, like, what the storyline could possibly be to make him want to come back. And, I just don't know. I mean, it really would not make any sense, and everything in this storyline has made sense, so they have to come up with something really good, and I can't think of what that would be.
No, I mean, for a third match, I mean, the only thing that would work if anybody would be planning a third one would be, it's such a remarkable war where The Undertaker actually takes a year off, too. I mean, he's so badly busted up, even he can't come back. But even then, why would he want to come back a third time? It doesn't make any sense to me that way for them to be planning a third if that rumor could possibly be true. But I think as long as Michaels is gone for enough time, if he goes for 8 to 12 months, you can bring him back with something. You can bring him back with something, and get people to buy into it and believe it, because there would be people that would want to see him back. But I mean, they couldn't do it 3 or 4 months down the road. It would just be too ridiculous.
No, I mean, I'm sure there's a way that they could bring anybody back. But I'm just looking at, if you go by how this storyline has progressed, and Shawn Michaels slowly losing his mind, and he is so desperate to beat the man that he puts his career on the line, if he loses again, why would his character ever want to come back? I mean, he pretty much said in the interview, you know, if I don't beat you, you know, what did he say? First, he said to Hunter, you know, "My career is finished," or whatever. And he said to Undertaker something like, "If I can't beat you, I have no career," or something like that. Which, okay, if that's true, if he so firmly believes that he'll put his career on the line, then why would he come back if he can't beat the guy again? It just, to me, it makes absolutely no sense.
Very, very simple. He wants to give his Hall of Fame ring to Hornswoggle.
That's... Hornswoggle. God, I hope he's not next on the cut list. By the way, speaking of Hornswoggle, I read this Bret Hart interview, and Bret Hart, they were asking about who do you hang out with and who are you friends with backstage, and he said he spent more time with Hornswoggle than anyone. They're like great pals. I don't know why I found that so funny. Like, of all the people that Bret Hart would bond with, Hornswoggle!
I have nothing for that. Thankfully for Hornswoggle, though, he's hanging out with Bret Hart and not hanging out doing nude calisthenics with Chuck Liddell.
Oh, that's right. We'll get to that in a second. But the other thing is another interview. Somebody was talking. It was Eric Bischoff. He's doing all these Q&As, and somebody asked him, they said, who were your favorite guys backstage, or who's the funniest guy, or this and that. And his answer was something like, Jay Lethal, he's the funniest guy I've ever met, or something like that. And I just read that, and I thought it was so funny, because where the hell is Jay Lethal? He's dropped off the face of the earth since Hogan and company came in. And meanwhile, here's Eric Bischoff talking about how he's the funniest guy in the entire world. And yeah, it was just like... Wow, being funny sure does numbers for you here in TNA. It means absolutely nothing. We're going to head to a break. We'll be back in just a moment. And yes, we will talk about Chuck Liddell. And it's not really quite a story, but it's rather comical if you followed it from the very beginning. So we'll talk about that, and we'll talk about more. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com, here for the next 45 minutes or so, talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. And, of course, for all the news in pro wrestling and MMA, always head to WrestlingObserver.com. We have daily news updates. We have TV reviews. We have columns. We have tons of free stuff there. And if you love this radio show, if you only hear this show one time per week, please consider signing up at our website. It's $9.99 a month. It's very cheap, cost of a couple of cups of coffee. It's $9.99 for a month, and we do daily radio shows. If you love this program, Dave Meltzer and I are back later on tonight, in fact, with a brand new edition of Wrestling Observer Radio. We'll have another Wrestling Observer Radio up after Raw on Monday night. Dave and I do usually 3 to 4 shows per week. Vinny and I do 2 to 3 shows per week reviewing the other programs. Mike, of course, is one half of the Adam and Mike Big Audio Nightmare with Adam Summers. You guys talk hockey, the Olympics lately, of course, Japanese pro wrestling, mixed martial arts, boxing, pretty much everything. And we've got shows covering pretty much everything you could possibly imagine that covers pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. We've got shows on the history of wrestling, Japan, mixed martial arts, pretty much everything. So check it out, WrestlingObserver.com. It's the place to go if you want more. And in fact, if you go to WrestlingObserver.com right now, and you scroll down on the right-hand side of the page, there are 3 free radio shows. You could spend your entire Sunday listening to Wrestling Audio Today, absolutely free. And if you love those shows, it's just a sample of what we put out pretty much every single day. So check it out, WrestlingObserver.com. Listen to the free radio shows. And if you enjoy them, consider signing up and getting more every single day. That's WrestlingObserver.com. And Mike, we promised to talk about Chuck Liddell and his nude video that's on the internet. You haven't seen it yet.
No, I think I'm happy about that. What what did I miss here with this, and why? How did this come to be?
I will just explain what it is. So the other day, I get an email, and it's somebody saying, Chuck Liddell and his girlfriend working out naked. WTF! And there's a link. And I was like, oh boy. And click on the link. It had been pulled. I kind of searched around, and I finally found a working link. And what it is it's a stationary camera that's zooming in and out, and in the background is a naked blonde riding a Stairmaster. And she's just Stairmastering away, and in the foreground is a naked man doing pull-ups. And he's got a mohawk. And he does a couple of pull-ups, and he drops down. And he runs over, and in the middle of the pull-up bar and the Stairmaster, in between them, is a leg press machine. And the man gets on the leg press machine, and it is, in fact, Chuck Liddell. And he's completely naked, and he starts doing the leg press. Now, granted, the naughty bits, for example, his ass and his Johnson and his girlfriend's, her little hoo-has and such, all of this is pixelated out. But they're nude. And he starts doing the leg press machine, and then he runs over and... It's like a 39-second clip, and the final shot is he runs into the bathroom, and he's polite enough to shut the door. So he's working out naked, but he's got enough to make sure he shuts the door before he uses the restroom. And they zoom in on his girlfriend, still just going on the Stairmaster, and then the video ends. And, of course, everyone's like, what the hell is this? Who taped this? How did this end up on the internet? What the hell is going on? As it turns out, it's a viral campaign for, oh God, I've already forgotten. I think it's Reebok. They did a hell of a job, by the way. And it's the wackiest thing, and it is not, in fact, a stolen video. But the day after it came out, Liddell's girlfriend, I've already forgotten her name, but she was like the number 12 most searched thing on Google. And Chuck Liddell, I think, was number 18. But whatever the shoe company was, I don't know if it was, I think it was Reebok. May have been Nike. I don't remember what it was. But they weren't even being searched for. So I always laugh at the idea of these viral campaigns because, I mean, this viral campaign did a hell of a job promoting Chuck Liddell and his girlfriend and a really, really horrible job promoting whatever the shoes were that they were supposed to be promoting. So I'm going to find this link and send it to you.
I'm not sure. Well, does the girlfriend look good enough where it takes out any thought of a naked Chuck Liddell right out of your mind?
Oh, yeah, it's worth it. There's a reason she was the number 13 most searched thing. So
Okay. Turn
on your IM, and I will find a link and send it to you, and you can have a hearty laugh. It's more funny than anything.
Better than Quentin Jackson's Nike ads that keep playing during the Olympics.
The which ones are those?
Well, it's just, I guess, a montage of different people like he have under contract, but it's him getting knocked down to the mat and getting back up again. Real quick clip of that, which is the first thing I've seen now because he's been under contract with Nike now for a pretty good period of time.
So there you go, and let's do some more news here. And actually, we've got a bunch of emails. Let's get into a couple of the emails, and then we'll continue here on the program. And apparently, my a stupid computer that I'm using to do this program here has decided it's going to install Java in the middle of this show. So if something goes horrendously wrong here, you'll know that it's a result of my computer freaking out and doing an installation without my permission, which hopefully is what it actually said it is. This person, Michael, here says, is it possible that Hulk will do the job to Flair on March 8th, or is it Hogan going over as usual? I know Hulk has always been insecure about Flair going over. What is your prediction for that particular match?
I would figure that Abyss gets the win over AJ Styles. Flair bleeds like a stuck pig. Hogan moves carefully. Maybe even bleeds like a stuck pig because he's going to have to move so slowly. But, with where they're going, I don't see any reason for Abyss not to beat Styles in that, I wouldn't think.
That actually is a good idea, obviously, to set up another match, perhaps for the week after. And I wanted to ask you about this. We have not talked about Impact yet, and maybe we'll talk about it later. I found the show to be quite appalling, aside from the opening and the closing segments. But what I found interesting about the whole deal was that they shot an angle where the bad guys beat up Hulk Hogan. They busted him open. He bled everywhere, this, that, and the other thing. And it was quite the to-do. And this coming Thursday on Impact, and this is a spoiler, everybody, just as a warning. If you don't want to know what happens, you might want to turn off the program here for a couple of minutes. But you have been duly warned. The show this coming Thursday night has an angle where Ric Flair ends up busted open, and apparently he does a very deep gig job. He bleeds all over the place. It's supposedly an all-time classic Ric Flair blade job. And I remember reading that and thinking, wow, you know, they're busting open Flair and this and that. And then like a couple of days later, I thought, hold on a second. Ric Flair is a heel. So why is Ric Flair being attacked and bloodied, apparently by the babyfaces, as a way to set up this match on Monday night? That makes absolutely no sense.
Because Hogan's not that dumb where he doesn't think Flair bleeding will be the thing that actually makes people watch. That brings me to the table more than really where they've gone with this whole feud anyway. So I guess I'd rather see that. But as far as logic goes, no, it doesn't really make any sense at all.
Yeah, why?
It should be Hogan the one doing that.
Yeah, I'm sitting here thinking, wait a second. The angle that they did on the other night was actually a really good angle in terms of setting up Monday night. I mean, you've got, you know, they bust open Hogan. He's left laying in a pool of his own blood. And then he cuts a promo challenging him to a tag match. And that's old school, and I'm sure it built up some interest in that match. But now they've got another week where I guess now the baby faces are going to get their revenge on Ric Flair and bust him open. So what in the hell are we going to watch the match for?
That was the whole thing with me, is that what happened this Thursday should have been happening on the live show on the 8th. That would lead into that match being the, you know, the Ultimate X or Destination X.
Yeah.
You know, to be the main event of that. So it didn't, yeah, it just did not make really any sense. I thought I was screwed up because I thought this was going to be the week that Flair bled, and to see Hogan, it was just like, well, I didn't really understand that.
No, and here's the other thing. All right, for everybody that thinks it's very important to establish strong ratings on Monday night, for those of you that think it's more important to do that than to pop a number on pay-per-view, fine. I will play devil's advocate and say fine. But the first Monday night show is probably going to do a good number just because it's the first live show of this new Monday Night Wars. So do you really need Hogan and Flair on that show? Why don't you just do March 8th? And why didn't they shoot that angle where Hogan got bloodied and challenged for the tag match? Why didn't you shoot that on March 8th and then put the match on March 15th?
And Brian, the fact that you had Angle and Anderson, that could be your big, really glowing thing going into the 8th if you wanted it to be, you didn't need, you know, you could have kind of, you know, done what we were saying with Hogan and doing this thing on the 8th on the first live show. But you know, going into it, you had Anderson and Angle, so I don't know.
It just reminded me of the Anderson Angle thing, just very quickly before we go to a break. I mean, two weeks ago, they had a great segment where Angle came out and talked about what these medals around his neck meant to him and how Anderson disrespected him, and he's sitting there, he's actually crying in the ring, and it's a very heavy segment, and Anderson comes out and makes fun of him and beats him up and leaves him laying, and I thought, my God, they may actually have something here. And then this week, Angle beat him up, took his medals back, and cost Anderson a match, and they just completely killed the feud dead. And I've got more to say about this, but we have to end a break, so I'll jump into it when we get back. But more on that, more emails, more phone calls, just more. Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com, here for the next 20 minutes, talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. We were talking about the Impact show this past Thursday night, the Ken Anderson deal. As I mentioned before we went to break, they shot a great angle a week ago where Kurt Angle came out and talked about how Kennedy had or Anderson had disrespected all of the soldiers, the troops, the parents of fallen soldiers by spitting on these tags that had been given to him by a soldier at Fort Hood. And, you know, some people will talk about how, well, I can't believe they used real life deaths in an angle, but I thought they did it I was okay with it because it was part of a wrestling angle. Yes. But at the same time, Kurt Angle went out there and, you know, he was really crying. I mean, when he got into telling the story about this soldier and just talking about the military and what the military meant to him and all the problems he'd been having over the last several months. I mean, he really broke down. I mean, this was a really, he had a chance to go out there and for a couple of minutes be honest about things. And I truly believe that he was honest about everything that he was saying. So in a sense, it was almost like a tribute to the troops, and it became an angle. But I didn't feel that it was tasteless in the way that a lot of things have been done in wrestling over the years that I've actually found to be very tasteless. But regardless, it was a heavy angle. Anderson beat him up and left him laying. And then this week, Anderson comes out and he's cutting a promo, and Kurt Angle shows up. He hits him with a chair. He takes off his medals. He takes them back, the ones that Anderson had stolen, and Anderson gets thrown into the ring and pinned by Rob Terry. And I could not believe how they just completely killed off this angle. I mean, just completely killed it off. Why would you need to see the match? The babyface got his revenge. He got back the medals that had been stolen from him, his stolen property. He humiliated the heel. I just watched it, and I was almost outraged at how badly they'd screwed this up. And so that basically what I'm saying is this leads me to thinking about this Thursday night, where they did such a great job with Hogan and Abyss and Flair and AJ. They did such a great job building up this match on March 8th. And from the sounds of it, and I haven't seen it yet, so I could be wrong, a lot of these impacts have read poorly on paper and ended up a little bit better on television. But from the sounds of it, what they're doing is they are giving the babyfaces their revenge on Thursday night, making there be absolutely no reason to have to tune in on Monday to see the match.
Well, and that's the thing. So Anderson and Angle are wrestling Monday, the 8th. Well, I mean, why, if you were going to do this, why not just, I don't understand why you wouldn't, again, do it the Thursday before that Monday, if you're going to do something like this, but keep them apart for that long, because Anderson's doing a great job being a prick and running his mouth. And, you know, it does make everything seem, as of now, really anticlimactic after, I mean, Angle lays him out. He doesn't even, you know, threaten to bash his throat in with a chair or anything like that. He drops the chair, gets Terry to, which, by the way, the 5-second match is a fabulous use of Rob Terry if you're going to use him. So that was fine. But it just makes everything seem a little bit anticlimactic. And really, as much as people may not like how the was formulated with the Fort Hood stuff and all that stuff, again, it was from the heart, seemingly. Two, it was infinitely better than what they did with Jesse Neal and that. So, I mean, I think it was well done, but I wanted to see Anderson go on with this and run his mouth for a lot longer and keep them apart for a lot longer.
Yeah, I mean, I actually don't know if they're doing Angle and Anderson on the 8th. I was more talking about the tag match, but
That's the whole thing, too, is where is this going to lead to? I mean, because I didn't think they had announced a match.
No, and the whole thing is, to me, what pro wrestling is, and it's always been, and it's good versus evil. It's a fight. I mean, many people have mentioned this, where if you go to a basketball game and a fight breaks out in the stands, everybody stops watching the basketball to watch the fight. I mean, no matter where you are, no matter what you're doing, if a fight breaks out, people stop to watch the fight. That's why there will always, I mean, if a major star, if Randy Couture died on a UFC pay-per-view in the ring, and just it became a snowball effect and MMA was banned in the United States, it would not be the end of mixed martial arts. It would absolutely at some point have a resurgence. Same with pro wrestling. I don't think that, I mean, roller derby was extremely popular for a while. Dave always makes this analogy, and roller derby ended up dying. And I don't think that that's going to happen to pro wrestling. No matter what happens, I think there's always going to be pro wrestling in some form, because people always like to see folks fighting, whether it's real or fake. So what pro wrestling is it's a guy you like and it's a guy you don't like, or even two guys that you like, whatever. It's them having a fight. And there's usually, there has to be a reason for you to want to watch them fight if there's more than a couple of them. Because, I mean, if it's just, you know, you're at a basketball game, two dudes fight, it's the only fight you're going to see. So, hey, there's a fight. If there's a series of fights or there's fights on every week, it helps to give people a reason to want to see them fight. Now, the easiest way to do that is you have a bad guy do something, and the good guy is going for revenge. I mean, this is the most basic storyline there's ever been, really probably in the history of the world. So, in pro wrestling, the big match on pay-per-view, you want to lead into that match with the heel doing something dastardly so that you've got to pay your money to see the babyface get his revenge. I mean, this is all it is. And on Impact, I mean, you've got the Anderson deal. I mean, Kurt already got his revenge. What more is there? What reason is there for us to see them fight? I wanted to see them fight 2 weeks ago because Kurt did his thing, Anderson beat him up, and he was such a prick. I just wanted to see Angle beat the crap out of him. Now I don't care. Angle already beat the crap out of him. He already got his stolen property back. It's the same thing with Flair and Hogan. I was excited. It was at least interesting, the idea of this match, because the bad guys beat up Hulk Hogan and they made him bleed, which nowadays you don't see blood much anymore. That's a pretty big deal. And now all of a sudden, this coming Thursday, the babyfaces are going to get their revenge and Ric Flair is going to be rendered bloody. Why would I need to see the match at that point? It's such basic stuff that how do you screw that kind of thing up?
You overthink it by taking 2 weeks to write a show.
And
being so involved in writing that show, you don't get to see anybody else's to see what they may be doing.
Let's go to the phones here very quickly. You're on Wrestling Observer Live. Who is this and where are you calling from?
Hey, it's James from Florida. How are you guys doing?
James, what's going on?
Not much. It's been a while. I was just calling to see, do we know if they're going to pull the trigger on the Bret Hart and Vince McMahon thing officially within the match for Mania tomorrow, or are they going to hold it off for like another week?
That's right. We haven't talked about that. It is expected that they're going to pull the trigger tomorrow, and it's going to be really interesting to see how they do it because Vince has invited Bret to the show. And here is what we know. What we know is that Bret supposedly broke his leg. That's what WWE is claiming. We also know that Stu Hart is going into the Hall of Fame this year, which on the surface makes no sense. So the conclusion that many people have come to is what's going to happen is Vince is going to show up. Bret will be in a wheelchair with his broken leg. Vince will say, as a peace offering, I'm going to put your father into the Hall of Fame this year. They're going to get into an argument. Maybe Vince will challenge him to a match knowing he's crippled. They'll agree to the match. And this actually could be done over a couple of weeks. But regardless, after they agree to the match, Bret Hart stands up in the wheelchair and reveals it was all a ruse. His leg was not broken. Him and Cena were in on it. And Vince is locked into a match with a healthy Bret Hart. That's pretty much where everybody figures it's going. I don't know if that's where it's going, but that seems to make the most sense.
To me, that'd be the smartest way to book it, actually, to still give it credibility, especially after that accident thing a couple weeks ago. I think that's the best way they can do it with what they've given themselves.
Yeah, I mean, you can't have if Bret's going to do the match, I mean, you can't have him going in there with a cast on his leg. You know, he's limited enough as it is. So, I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see where they go, but that is tomorrow.
And now, just one last thing about the Bret Hart thing. What are some of the moves that they're not going to be able to do in that match? Because Bret Hart's mobility, just everything about his physical presence, to me, is very, very limited because of the stroke. They have to be careful with so many things.
Yeah, that's going to be interesting. I mean, they appear to have... I want to thank you very much for the call, by the way. They appear to have set in stone Batista and Cena in a singles match, which means they have to do Bret versus Vince, I guess, in a singles match. Or I guess they could each be in a corner, but one would think they're going to do a match. But regardless, you can't hit Bret in the head, obviously. Vince didn't even slap him in the face, so obviously no shots to the head whatsoever. I don't know if Bret... I don't think Bret can take any back bumps, so he's extremely limited. He can obviously throw punches, he can take shots to the gut and that sort of thing, and probably some shots to the back, but that's going to be a tough match to work. Mike, what do you think?
Yeah, I don't like it at all. I mean, one, if you include a Divas match and you include a singles match between Bret and Vince, you're already up to 10 matches right there. I just don't. I'll sacrifice the WWE title as far as seeing a title match and have them join along in with Cena and Batista. I don't see how. I mean, if they're able to pull it off somehow and they do it great, since I can't really see it happening, I kind of don't want to see it happening.
By the way, we just got some news right here. Another person has been released from WWE. Charlie Haas is done.
Well, see, Funaki should be worried, because if they remember that Charlie Haas is under contract, in order to release him, that may be bad news for Kung Funaki.
It may be, although he's survived so many axings that I presume he's there for life.
Well, he and Tatsu can be the opening they need for WWE Japan, but... I mean, Charlie Haas, how big of a surprise, was that? So no big deal there. Mike Knox will just need a new bearded partner to tag up with.
I wanted to mention this before we head to the next break. Your thoughts on the idea UFC has, which I actually think is an awesome idea. They're putting the UFC pay-per-views in over 300 theater chains across America, starting with the show coming up later in March with George St. Pierre headlining. And I talked to somebody who drove by one of the theaters, and apparently it's going to be $20. So you're going to be able to watch it on a gigantic screen. You're going to pay significantly less than you would for the show in HD. And they're going to be making a hell of a lot more money off that than, say a guy paying $54.95 and having 10 friends over. If those 10 friends all go and watch the show at a theater on the giant screen, they're making a lot more money. So your thoughts on this? I know that I've seen it before on WWE pay-per-views. I used to work in Canada, and they would put them on the big screen, and I thought it was awesome.
Yeah, I mean, it's really kind of wild to me that this stuff has come back. I mean, for years and years and years, closed circuit, that's where you went and saw big boxing matches. And, if it wasn't a bar, it would be an arena where they would string up a big screen and you'd sit there and watch it. And I know what happens in Canada, still at the movie theaters. And I guess Mayweather's fight earlier on this year had a lot of success. And, I never thought that they would want to go away, the cable industry or anybody else would want to go away from the amount of money you make but from people just sitting at home and clicking a button. But I think with economic times and turning it into a little neighborhood gathering or a party, I mean, you might as well take the shot at it. If people are willing to spend 20, at least you're getting 20 out of them, as opposed to 50. 20 is better than nothing.
We're going to head to a break. We'll be back with the final segment here on the show. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here for the final segment on the show. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. And yesterday, of course, the massive 8.8 magnitude earthquake in Chile. And, of course, there was a lot of fear yesterday that a tsunami was going to hit Hawaii. And I turned on CNN yesterday, and lo and behold, there's BJ Penn with his Skype cam posted at the shoreline, and he was doing live updates on CNN for about an hour there. And thankfully, nothing happened. Just got a couple of big waves, but that was quite the sight to see.
Oh, yeah. I got a buddy on a Coast Guard ship out there, so I was listening into NPR out of Hawaii, and sitting and listening to that was surreal as it was, and then seeing BJ Penn being the source of information for the world out of what was going on was just kind of amazing, too.
And that is pretty much it for today's show. Next week, we've got a ton of stuff to talk about. Next week, Sunday, will be the day before the brand new Monday Night War. So we'll talk all about that. And, of course, the road to WrestleMania will pretty much know what's going on with Bret Hart and Vince McMahon after tomorrow night's edition of Raw. And perhaps some other cuts as well and a lot of other news. Always head to WrestlingObserver.com for the latest daily news updates. And, of course, as mentioned earlier, you can always check out the latest three free radio shows. And if you love what you hear, you can consider signing up and getting more. And, of course, on Sundays, if you ever tune in on Sirius Channel 122 or your local affiliate and you find that this show is preempted, you can always head to WrestlingObserver.com and we'll have a link where you can listen to the show live on your computer or on your phone. So check it all out at WrestlingObserver.com. That is it from here. Thanks, Mike. Thanks, everybody. We'll talk to you again next week. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Radio Network.